Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. Just let it be. Na 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. This is your host, Terry Mason, show the Doctor in the House. We're here every Sunday morning at 10 o'clock, and we're glad that you're here with us as well. Well, this is the first Sunday of the month, and as the first Sunday of the month, we always have that a dedicated day for the University of Illinois, University of Illinois, specifically the Cancer Center, but we have a number of issues that we discuss from the University of Illinois, and today we're going to be talking about not feeling so good because the holidays are coming up. And there are a lot of people who this may be their holiday of one of what I call many first. The first New Year's without a loved one. The first Thanksgiving without the loved one. A first birthday that has passed. And so joining me to have a conversation about that is Nadia El Amin. She is a PhD and someone who has been particularly skilled not only in substance abuse, but mental health services to sort of walk through this and talk about what this means, how people are feeling, and her experience with how you can manage that. So good morning. How are you, Dr. Lamy?
Good morning. Thank you, Dr. Mason. And thank you for calling me Dr. Alamin. I'm not quite a doctor yet. I have a few more months left, but I'm really excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's get right into it. This is a season of the year where people are going through a lot of these firsts. So let's talk about, first of all, let's just talk about mental health in this time, particularly coming out of what we had to deal with COVID, people locked in, people not able to see people for some people for maybe a year or two, and now getting to this point, and now we're still coming back with some issues around flu and things of that nature. So how do you help people navigate this?
Yeah. Thank you for that question. Before we get started, I would like to say that that the views that I'm expressing are of my own and not that of, SAMHSA or the federal government or UIC, not necessarily. But holiday blues are very common, as we all know. Like, there's a survey that shows that 65% of adults experience some type of holiday blues, which are, temporary feelings of anxiety or depression during the holiday seasons, which are just exacerbated by the increased stress, And like you just mentioned, like it could be the first for a lot of people, loss of family members, or just being far away from family members, which then is more fueled by the lack of sun, by the cold weather, all of these seasonal changes that are also happening, which, again, like you mentioned, has been even harder post-COVID or even now during, while we still have COVID. So a lot of the things that we have been seeing is just a lot, just higher increases in anxiety and depression in general, and then especially during the holiday seasons, which we can, we just encourage people to stick to their normal routines. Sticking to your normal routines kind of help with seasonal depression and seasonal anxiety, getting some sleep, just taking a break from all of the stressful things of that come with the holiday, with being with loved ones, with not being with loved ones. So just taking a break, but not isolating yourself and spending time with loved ones. Eating and drinking in moderation, getting some exercise. Those are all great things that help with holiday blues. And just setting a budget for your holiday plans, setting realistic goals about what you wish to accomplish in the new year. This is the time when a lot of people have New Year resolutions that, you know, may be an added source of stress. So just kind of being realistic with your goals, listening to music and finding other ways of de-stressing really help with the holiday blues.
You know, this is a very difficult, and I do this every year. We have a conversation about this because this is difficult. This is very hard for people.
Yes.
And we sit down and we'll talk about it. And we talk about it sometimes rather academically, but when you're there and you, let's say you're by yourself, maybe this is the first holiday you're not celebrating with your spouse or a mother or a father or a sister or a brother. I mean, there are people, we have this, unfortunately, we haven't had this happen even with trauma, where people have, you know, and unfortunately, we've had more than that. We like to see in Chicago, people being taken away prematurely. So the thing is that when should someone say, I have a relative or what have you, and I talk to them, what trigger should I be listening for that tells me that I should probably help them get some help?
I think a lot of the times it's very hard as a lay person to identify these triggers, right? So that's a great question. But listening for like signs of hopelessness, just people expressing, you know, not really looking forward to the holidays, maybe not looking forward to the spring, the summer, like this kind of feeling hopeless or feeling unmotivated to do their regular activities. So if it's a person who gets up in the morning and exercises every day or, you know, does any other thing, if you see a significant change from their daily routines, if they seem a lot more stressed, a lot more irritable, easily irritable, if they're not eating, things like that, that may seem just kind of like normal reactions to life. But if they're very different from their day to day, or if they seem to be in excess, then that's the point when you should look into, as a loved one, look into, you know, finding them help, which may just be like acknowledging that they are going through a hard time and that you're there for them if they need to talk, just kind of opening up that space. Or it could be recommending that they talk to a professional. So the amount of, the type of help you get them could kind of vary based on their needs. But I think just paying attention to some of these triggers will be really helpful.
We're talking with Dr. Tabi, Dr. El Amin, because I know you're a PhD candidate.
Yes.
So I want to congratulate you on that. But I want you to know that you can call in and ask Dr. questions, or I want to keep promoting you.
Yes, I appreciate it.
And if you have questions, yourself, you're not feeling where you think you need to feel, or you've got a loved one that is sort of a little down, more down in the dumps than usual, give us a call here at 773-591-1690. That's 773-591-1690. Join the conversation and we'll be happy to take your call. You know, this is a really important topic because people, these, in addition to just the normal situation, there are people who lost people during COVID. Yes. And this is bringing back a lot of those things. Should you tell them, oh, don't worry about that. Just, you know, toughen it up, you know, yeah. Or, you know, suck it up. What do you say? And then what are the triggers as a lay person? What are the things I should be listening for from them that says, hey, you know what? This is beyond feeling just a little depressed. I need to help you get somebody. And then where would you go? Where would you advise them to go? It's three questions. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I would definitely not tell them to toughen up. I think it's really important to validate people's feelings. Another reason why people are not opening up about their just mental health challenges or just any emotional challenges that they may be having. So I think it's really important to be open and listen to our family members, our friends about just the challenges that they're experiencing for sure. And then, like I said earlier, just changes to daily mood, change like easily irritable. When people are easily irritable, when they're not eating, when they're not just like engaging with family members, if you see that they're isolating themselves. Seasonal, you know, these holiday blues are seasonal. Mental health conditions are temporary, but they may not be, right? Like you mentioned, the COVID-19 pandemic has led to like significant changes in our daily lives, both just physically and mentally, financially, and in, you know, a lot of ways, it has changed how we live. It has changed who we connect with, who is in our lives and isn't in our lives. Like we know for Black and Brown communities, that's been exponentially harder, right? Like we've seen that Black and Brown people were diagnosed with COVID and died from COVID at a lot higher rate than others. We also see that they have experienced the most financial and economic burden as a result of COVID and have lost the most people, which puts them at a significantly higher risk for, you know, mental health challenges, which may seem seasonal, but may not be. So it's really important to just pay attention to the people around us. And sometimes it's not always us having to identify it, but really listening when someone is coming to you. Maybe that's the first step of them trying to seek help. And just some places that I would encourage my own family members and loved ones to go to, and I would encourage you to do the same. If you're in Illinois, there's the Mile Square Health Centers, which are part of the UI health system. They provide really affordable and very easily accessible behavioral health care. So that's one place. I would also direct people to the SAMHSA Treatment Finder. You can find that at findtreatment.samhsa.gov. And SAMHSA is SAMHSA.gov. So on that website, you can type in your zip code, the type of care you're looking for, and it'll find you treatment centers around just near you that are a lot easier to access. I would also recommend the 988 Suicide Crisis Lifeline. This lifeline is what's replaced the National Suicide Hotline. So now you can just dial the number 988 or in any of your phones, or you can text 988 to just find, confidential resources for you or your loved ones whether you are in crisis or not, if you're just looking for, you know, just some resources to just be like, you know, my family member is feeling this way and they are doing this or they're doing that and I do not know what to do about it. How can I help them? And they can give you some resources that are in close proximity to you so that they're easily accessible. You could potentially even get resources that are, you know, if you needed a Black provider, for example, or an older person provider, just like some very specific types of care, you can get some recommendations on the 988 call line. And then another website I'd recommend is the National Alliance for Mental Illness, or NAMI, NAMI.org. And on that website, you can also find just a wealth of resources for helping your family and friends during this time, and just in general for any mental health needs that you have. And I know that they have NAMI chapters in all of the states. So you can go and find like the Illinois chapter, the Wisconsin chapter, the, you know, whatever state chapter, to find some state-specific resources as well. So I think those four or five that I listed are really good first resources to go to, and they can kind of direct you to others.
I want you to go back to this 988 because I never heard that before.
Yeah, it's new. So 988 launched in July of this past year, this year, 2022. It used to be just the national hotline, the suicide prevention hotline. But now we have SAMHSA, along with many other federal partners, have tried to just kind of make it easier and centralize mental health care. And it's so that people, you know, people who are in crisis call 911 and they may not receive the proper care. And as we know, in, you know, Black and brown communities, the police arriving for a crisis care may not be the best option. In some situations. So you can really call 988. It's, you know, an easy to remember number. You can call it, you can text it. And it will connect you with a crisis provider within your state, within whatever area you're calling in. Whoever's closest to you will answer the phone. And if it's just a crisis that you are having, they can talk you through it. And if they determine that you need follow-up care, they can recommend follow-up care. If you need immediate care, they can recommend immediate care. They can send some care. So it's, I don't want to necessarily compare it to 911, but it's similar in that it is crisis response. It'll get to you. It'll be a way to get quick help. And quick help from a trained professional who will connect you with someone that is, you know, close to you, to your area.
Now, are these services offered at a charge? Do people have to worry about have to pay for that?
No, none of the services I've listed so far are of charge. They're all free. So you can access all of these services for free. The phone numbers, the websites, all of them are free. So they're just a way to make it so that behavioral health care is accessible for all people.
Now there's another number, a 312. Mm-hmm. A 312 number that is 996-2000. That number is to whom?
I believe that's the Illinois Lifeline number. So if you are in Illinois, you can still call that number, but they are connected. 988 and those state-specific numbers are connected now. So if you call 988 and you're in Illinois, you'll still get connected with, you know, the same type of services. And if you're in, I don't know, Michigan and you call 988, you'll be connected to that same type of service in Michigan, just wherever you are.
You know, that's a really important thing. I'm going to be honest with you. I never heard of 988 until just now. And I think that that's important that people know that such a number exists. And we want to make sure that we mention this a couple, three more times before the end of the show, because 988, that's a simple number to remember.
Yeah.
And for people that are having crisis. Now, does this matter about how old someone is? Let's say it's a preteen or teen or a senior citizen. Does it matter?
No, it does not matter at all. So anyone can call this number. It does, and you don't even have to be the person who is having the crises. You can just call and say, you know, my brother is experiencing these symptoms, or my brother is just acting, you know, differently than he usually is, and I'm worried about him. What services can I get for him, or how can I help him? Like, you could just call to say that. So anyone can call, whether it be for themselves or for their loved ones.
You know, that's really, really very, very important. And I want people to make sure they take advantage of that, because I think that's a very important resource. Make sure you put that down next to your 911. Everybody knows 911, but we know that there are not just adults, but children sometimes that may be in crisis. So it doesn't matter the age of anyone who is in crisis, this number can be used for.
Yes, the age does not matter. And, you know, sometimes young people may want to text rather than talk to someone. And so that's an option as well. So, you know, if you're a young person who just wants to talk to someone about your mental health or your family member's mental health, and you just want to text about it, you can text the 988 number as well and get, you know, the same kind of services and support.
Now, is there a charge associated with that call?
No, there's no charge.
You know, so this is really, really very important information. And I'm really, really, really glad that this came out, because I be honest, I wasn't aware of it myself.
Yeah.
And now I can't say that anymore, because now I'm aware of it, because from time to time we do have issues like this, that people are in crisis and you don't know what to do. You know, you just don't know what to do. And not just their violent or cursing and all that kind of stuff or throwing things around, but just they're crying and won't stop.
Yeah. I mean,
there are many, in many ways that depression and mental illnesses reflect themselves. So, and this is a good way to get started. We're going to take our short commercial break here in just a second. But I just, again, want to thank you. I want you to put that number out again and say exactly what it is, and then we'll go from there to our break. So go right ahead.
Okay. So the number again is 988. It is a number. It's a suicide and crisis lifeline. You can call that number or text that number if you or your loved one are experiencing any types of crises or any type of behavioral health or mental health symptoms or conditions, and you need some support, some advice, some resources. You can call that number to get that.
All right, we're going to take our short commercial break, and we'll be back on the other side with Zelamine, who is talking and getting working on her PhD. So we're going to thank her. We're going to congratulate her in advance. But stay with us, and we'll be right back with more in the Doctor in the House right after this. What it used to be,
there's so much. It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to. Nope. I'm sure you've got a perfectly good excuse. Kids, work. I get it. You're busy. So what better time than now? Let's begin. Raise one finger if you're a man. Ladies, none yet. Oh, count in your head if you're driving. Now, three more fingers for everyone over 60, two over 50, one over 40, one more if you're not physically active. Another finger if anyone in your family has type 2 diabetes. Another if you've got high blood pressure. If you're overweight, raise another finger. Two if you're very overweight. And three if you're really overweight. You've just taken the world's first audio prediabetes test. And if you're holding up five or more fingers, visit doihaveprediabetes.org or talk to your doctor. There's no excuse, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world's changed so very much from what it used to be.
There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. Just let it be. Na 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me.
And we're back, and we're talking about a very, very important topic today. Make sure that you're tuning in. And there was very important information, if you're just tuning in, that you need to know about, because we talked about a number that's like 911, but only for mental health crises. And that number is now 988. And so I'm joined today with, I want to call her doctor. Well, I'm going to promote her to Dr. Alamini. But I know she has a master's and she's working on her PhD. But she gave us this information about 988. And again, I want, for those of you just joining us, really to talk about just a little bit more about, for those who just tuned in and say, well, what is this 988 number? Let's talk a little bit more about that for those folks, and then we'll move on.
Yeah. So again, 988 is a crisis hotline number you can call and text. It is a number you can use to access crises or any mental or behavioral health resources or support for you or your loved ones. So you can call this number if you yourself are experiencing a mental health crisis, or you notice that your family member is in the middle of a crisis, or you're seeing some beginning symptoms or anything like that, and you just are looking for resources. So you can call or text this number and be connected with a trained professional who can provide you some of these resources, and resources near where you live, so that it's easy to access.
There's another number, 312-996-2000. Let's talk about that number.
Yeah. So that number again is the Illinois specific number. Both that number and the 988 number get you similar resources. It's just the 312 number is specific to Illinois. So if you're experiencing crises or need some resources within Illinois, you can use that number. But 988 is national, so it will connect you to resource, and it's 24 hours as well. So that's one thing I forgot to mention earlier. It's 24 hours. So you know, if you are having a crisis in the middle of the night or early in the morning or late at night, anytime, you can call this 988 number and be connected with someone.
And you just said something that I want to make sure we don't gloss over, is that 988 is a national number.
Yes, it is a national number. So it's like, you know, you can call a 911 anywhere in the country and, you know, but be connected to the police. In a similar way, you can call 988 from anywhere in the country and be connected to mental health or behavioral health services. So, you know, just because you're away visiting family somewhere else, for example, it doesn't mean you can't still use this number. You can use this number from anytime, anywhere in the country.
And if you have questions, please, because I don't want you to wait till the end of the show and everyone tries to call in. So if you have a question, please call right now. Area code, call 773-591-1690. That's 773-591-1690. So give us a call. The operator will take your call when you call in, and let me know that you've called, and we will go right to your call as soon as we can. So I don't want you to wait till we get to the end of the show and everybody's, you know, it's trying to call in. So call in now. so that we can get your question, because I want your question is important, and I want you to get an answer to your question. So please, please call in right now so we can get an answer to your question. And, you know, this is sort of a mental health is sort of still, I don't know why, but it's a little taboo sometimes. And yes, people don't want to talk about it or admit to it or think they have a mental health problem. And the only way they think they have a mental health problem is that you're getting ready to kill somebody, or you want to get ready to kill yourself. But there's something way before that time happens. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, I think mental health in general is, like you said, very taboo in the population as a whole in society, unfortunately. But it's important to remember that, you know, the mind is part of our body, and mental illness is illness. It's a disease as well, and it's the same as having diabetes, hypertension, any of those other diseases. And it's important to think of it like that. You wouldn't, you wouldn't look at a person who has diabetes and, destigmatize them or seclude them from society because they have diabetes or because they have cancer or whatever other diseases. And in a similar way, people with mental health conditions have illnesses, you know, and these are diseases that should be treated and looked at in that same way. And that's, I think, one step of destigmatizing mental health as a whole. But I think looking at mental health in the Black and Brown communities is particularly different because mental health is already stigmatized, but then in these communities, it's even more stigmatized, for various reasons. Some of which are just in alignment with Black and Brown cultures of, keeping things in the family, supporting each other, praying to God rather than seeking help from a medical professional. Like, these are things that are common in these communities, but also because of historical and structural differences and disparities in how mental health was defined and described, right? Like, historically, Black people were not treated well in the mental health system or in the health system in general. So this kind of creates this type of stigma about what it means to be a person with mental health conditions, or it's just kind of a sign of weakness, a sign of just not being as strong as you're supposed to be. As a Black woman or Black man, there's all these stereotypes about, hyper-masculinity in men and just like these super women schemas in Black women that kind of don't lend themselves to talking about mental health as easily. So there's just a lot more stigma to describing mental health and then to getting care for mental health as well. And there are a lot of systematic changes that need to happen from, from the mental health system as a whole, like about how mental health symptoms are described or defined. Like, that needs to be changed, of course. But in our day-to-day lives, I think using some destigmatizing languages are relatively easy ways to normalize mental health conditions and seeking treatment for mental health. Like, for example, using person-centered or person-forward language, which will describe a person as a person with depression instead of a depressed person, or a person with schizophrenia instead of a psychotic or schizophrenic person, which, you know, these are very simple changes, really change how we think about mental health as a whole. It takes away the discriminatory language we use when we're describing a person with mental health or behavioral health challenges, using terms like a person with substance use disorder instead of an addict or an alcoholic or something like that. A lot of these small changes to our day-to-day in our day-to-day conversations can really change whether or not some of our loved ones feel comfortable coming to us or feel comfortable seeking treatment for themselves. I would say just from our, like a lay person, our day-to-day lives, changing some of that language is a really good way to start to destigmatize mental health.
You know, that's a great, you know, we don't, a lot of times when I do shows, I get a lot of calls about other kinds of things, but I've noticed on some of the mental health shows that I don't necessarily get a lot of calls. And it's, I'm not sure. I think part of it is people may be afraid of being stigmatized even by making the telephone call. So I don't want anyone to feel that way. We're doing this because we're trying to get you information that you can use to help yourself and your family. So I don't want anyone to feel that way. And I'm glad you went through what you just did, because we do need to destigmatize. We don't stigmatize people who have diabetes. We don't stigmatize people, you know, who have cancer. Sometimes we do. We did stigmatize people early on with HIV in that epidemic, but now we don't even do that. We have open commercials where people are talking about this thing. So it's really, or asthma or any of the other conditions.
Yeah. And
just as things can go wrong with the lungs, or things can go wrong with the heart, or things can go wrong with circulation, things can go wrong in the brain. And they're not uncurable. They're not things that nothing can be done about, but the techniques are different. You know, people think you could just medicate your way out of everything, and that's not the case. And so this conversation is very, very, very helpful.
And I just want to add that, you know, not everything is necessarily diagnosable. It does not mean you have clinical depression or a clinical diagnosis of anxiety if you're having these symptoms. Like we mentioned earlier, there's holiday blues that are temporary feelings of anxiety and depression, but those things are also real. They are, they can cause a lot of stress in your life, and they can cause a disturbance to your daily routine, lack of motivation. Like, all of those things are also real. And it may not be that you need to be diagnosed with a mental health condition, but it just may mean that you're experiencing these symptoms and need to do something about those symptoms. And that's okay too. So you don't have to always think about, you know, feeling sad or feeling unmotivated as, you know, all of a sudden I am a clinically depressed person. It could just be you're experiencing these symptoms. But that does not mean that those symptoms don't need to be treated, or that you need to say, you know, I'll just suck it up because these are temporary, because they could become not temporary. They could become a permanent if they're left untreated. And also it's important to think about if you're a person of color, especially the significantly higher levels of stress you may be under, the higher levels of you know, socioeconomical lack of socioeconomical resources you might have, the significant significantly less access you might have to healthcare, to health services. All of those things are sources of stress that could increase your risk of mental health conditions or mental health symptoms, I should say. So it's very common. It happens to all of us, and it's just important to treat it as that, and to make sure that you get some type of support and treatment. It's not anything to be ashamed of or to be, it doesn't take away from this, your strength or the strong person that you are. It's just something that happens to all of us, and it's important to get treated for it.
Yeah. And treatment doesn't always mean you have to take medication.
Exactly. Yeah.
What are some of the non-medication ways that you treat or deal with these issues?
Yeah, and so in the holiday blues situation, like I mentioned earlier, just kind of sticking to normal routines, getting some exercise, getting some sleep, spending time with loved ones are really important. But other non-medication ways to deal with it is talk therapy. Going to therapy and just talking to a person does not mean you have to use medication. But sometimes it's nice to talk to someone outside of our family, someone that is not, you know, connected, related to any of the issues that we may be experiencing or having. So talk therapy, there's online versions of talk therapy. There is in-person talk therapy, just any types of talk therapy is really helpful. But it could also just be, you know, connecting with loved ones. It could be talking to your pastor, your just like your religious leaders of any kind. For Black people, the types of care they seek, the type of support they seek may be different than for white people or for other races. It could, it's oftentimes tied to their social circles and their, the people that are around them. So it could be, you know, talking to an elder in your community. It could be talking to a religious leader. It could just be talking to your best friend. Whatever you need to do to get to, decrease the types of stress you are feeling and the symptoms that you are feeling are all valid ways of dealing with your mental health symptoms.
Sure, and there are other things that we want to make sure that we get to. We got a few callers, so we're going to go to our phone lines right now. So, okay. Caller, you're on the line with your question. Go right ahead.
Well, howdy, greetings. This is Mama D. In the past, a black face was put on violence. When violence happens today, it's said by politicians and police officials that that person was mentally ill. When in fact, the mentally ill are more likely to be victims of violence than they are to be violent. But instead of using the language, these people are wicked or just evil, they say mental illness. So my question is, how can you change that stigmatizing? Because it seems to make mentally ill people less likely to seek treatment because society is already saying they did it.
That's a great question. I don't know that we can address it from the criminal justice point of view, but I think that you, and I'll let Dr. Ms. Alameen deal with that, and I may comment on the other side. Go right ahead, Ms. Alameen.
Yeah, first of all, thank you so much for raising that point, because that is a very important reason that a lot of Black people, especially Black men, may not seek treatment for their mental health. And so that's a systematic change that needs to happen, right? And it's not something that can happen overnight, but there are a lot of efforts to change how mental health is described and how Black people are treated and described in the eyes of the criminal system and in the eyes of just the mental health system in general. So that I know that there are some partnerships between behavioral health leaders and criminal justice systems to kind of train and explain to the people in law enforcement what it means to actually have a mental illness and not and what it means to have a mental illness and what those symptoms could do. And oftentimes just really recognizing that when you call the police or when you call someone someone who is having a mental health breakdown or a mental health crisis at the moment, we're often just thinking about the the discomfort they may be causing to us. But it's important to recognize the discomfort that they are feeling themselves, the people, the person with the mental health condition or the mental health crisis, that the discomfort that they are feeling, and really recognizing or learning about how to safely support that person rather than incarcerate them or antagonize them, really to cause them to feel a lot more unsafe and then make other people unsafe in return. So there's very slow moving changes coming, but I totally recognize that that's a very significant factor of why Black people may not be seeking treatment. And I also want to say that a lot of it is lack of evidence and lack of research around Black people and their mental health and what that looks like and what that means, and making them there's very few of the documents that the mental health system is based on that are actually based on research on Black people. Black people have not been part of the conversation in the past. And so researchers like myself are starting to really think about what are the specific factors of Black mental health, and what does that look like, and how do we incorporate that into the mental health system and the criminal justice system and law enforcement to really teach and train people on how to handle people with mental health conditions.
Got a couple more callers. We're going to go ahead to our next caller. Caller, you're on the air. Go right ahead with your question.
Yes. I wanted to know if drug addiction is considered a mental illness.
So drug use is not considered a mental illness. It is considered a behavioral health problem. Behavioral health encompasses both substance use and mental health issues, or mental health conditions, excuse me. And oftentimes, drug use and mental health conditions they go hand in hand, or they are subsequent, so that one kind of leads to the other or vice versa. And a lot of the resources that I mentioned earlier, including the 988, do offer services for both mental health conditions and substance use. But there are some substance use specific resources that you could also access. But in short, they're not considered the same thing, but that they're considered highly related.
All right, we want to go to our next caller. Caller, you on the air with your question. Go right ahead. Caller, go right ahead if you're there. Well, they may have hung up. But if you have any other calls, we've only got about 5 minutes left in the show. So I want to make sure that if you have a question and you want to get it answered, please, please, please call. Because that's what the show's for. It's for you to ask your questions, and that's why we have the experts on, to begin to give you the kinds of answers that we need. So I don't think, do we have any other callers? If we do, we'll take that other caller. If not, we'll proceed. Hello? All right, so let's go on. You know, Doc, I don't know why I keep wanting to promote you.
I appreciate it. You can call me that.
But you are a PhD doctoral candidate. I want people to understand you are a candidate. You are working on your PhD. I guess I'm just speaking into the future.
I'll come back in a few months when you can call me doctor for real.
No, because it's really, really important. We've got, like I said, just a few more moments. If you got a question, please call us now, 773-591-1690, 773-591-1690. And there's a question, after the show, if people want to look for any kind of help or anything like that, tell us where, let's get that number out again for the University of Illinois so people can avail themselves of that service.
Yeah.
That's that 996 number, right?
The 312 number. Mm-hmm. Yes. Let me see. I think it's
3-1-2-9-6-2000.
Yeah. So there's 312-996-2000. You can use that number to access services, or you could call 988 to access services. For, again, whether you are having a crisis or your family or friends or loved ones are having crises, you can access those services through those two numbers, either directly for yourself or your loved ones. And it doesn't have to be, you know, immediately I know what's going on. It could just be you calling to talk about a suspicion you have. Maybe you had a conversation with a loved one and suspect that they may be having a mental health crises, or maybe that they are struggling with their mental health and you just want some resources and some support. You can find services and support there on those numbers.
Well, that's so important. And, you know, I want people to avail themselves of that. You know, you really do need to take advantage of these opportunities. And that's why we do this show. And for 31 years or more, I've been doing this show. And it's all about trying to get resources out to the community. I know people, some people are celebrating Fred Hampton Day. They're celebrating all kinds of things today, or acknowledging, I should say, not celebrating, but acknowledging. And those things can sometimes make us sad too, because of we have to recount things that have happened to people who have been on the forefront for us. But I want to thank you so much. I want to thank you so much, Ms. Nasima, for being on the show. I said I didn't call you doctor that time, but but it's been so important to have you. The number again for the University of Illinois is 312-996-2000. And yep, that's the number at the University of Illinois. And if you can't remember that number, you can always dial 988 if somebody's in crisis, having a problem, and you need to get some support. We'll be back with the rest of our regular show that we've always done. We'll be starting those. This was the first one this week, and next week we'll be back with what we do every second Sunday, and we'll be having that conversation. So until next week, I want you to really think about what you've heard our PhD candidate talk about today. She's working on her PhD. Congratulations. And you said in a few months, I'm going to give you congratulations in advance for your PhD. I mean, that's an amazing accomplishment to be doing that. And I'm really looking forward to having you back after your PhD to talk more about these things. Is that going to be okay? Is that going to be okay?
That sounds amazing. Looking forward to it.
All right. The number again. The national number for crisis is 988, and the number at the University of Illinois is 312-996-2000. That's all we got for Dr. Nahouse today. I want to thank you all for listening. Tune in next week at the same time and station. Just want you to know that the next voice you're going to hear is that of Ms. Pam Morris-Walton, who's coming to make a joyful noise over the radio. And until next week at the same time and station, may God continue to bless each and every one of you with continued health and strength as I leave you now in peace.
As I ponder my existence, what's my purpose for residing with this mind. Fate would have me to go under, but there's a reason for my being.